We're getting morning after reaction on the 17th annual State of the Tribes address on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Glad you could be here. Before the legislature, John D. Johnson Sr., president of the Lac des Flambeaux Band of Lake Superior Chippewa, said harvesting walleye is just one hot button issue. His tribe shares life-sustaining resources with the community.
Yet our tribal members, when we do this, we're still harassed every year. Threatened, sometimes we're shot at, or even assaulted for harvesting fish, other resources to provide for our communities. Even though we restock countless lakes and fish and seek to protect, manage, and sustain natural resources for future generations, this behavior stems from ignorance.
Did you listen to the speech? What hit home? 800-642-1234. Larry Nesper directs the American Indian Studies Program and is an anthropology professor at UW-Madison. He wrote The Walleye War, The Struggle for Ojibwe Spearfishing and Treaty Rights. Larry, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you, Kate. It's good to be here, and good morning to all your listeners.
Good morning to you. Top line takeaways first. What did you think of the speech?
I really enjoyed the speech. I really appreciated hearing the word treaties mentioned within about three sentences of the beginning of that. It's the importance of recognizing that the tribes are sovereign entities, that they are there's an interdependence between tribal governments and the state governments. I think he also hit on the importance of casinos as revenue-generating entities for purposes of all of the different functions that the tribes take care of. We could go into those if we'd like to at some point. I also liked the point he made about old Abe. He talked about this eagle that was the symbol or the mascot, an appropriate mascot for the 8th Wisconsin Regiment during the Civil War. And it was he introduced that first before he got into the topics of inappropriate mascots, yeah, which I thought was an interesting kind of juxtaposition.
Why don't we start with the treaties? President Johnson, he brings up four treaties right away negotiated in the 1800s. He does this right away in the speech as he describes his reservation. Can you explain the significance of these treaties and how they should inform us today?
Sure. The first two that should be thought about are the treaties of 1837 and 1842, which are enormous land cession treaties, and that was effectively a transfer of trust. He used the word ceding or a land cession, and then he used the word or entrusting. In other words, he gave us this idea that Indian people have been entrusted with the land and what they as stewards of the land, and what they did was transfer that trust to the federal government, which I think is a very interesting and kind of creative way to put this. It's interesting and it's important that 1837 and 1842 treaties transferred land and also stipulated for the rights of Native people to continue to hunt, fish, and gather on those lands, which means in order that they could continue to live there and to change in the ways in which any society changes. So it was a presumption that they would continue to live there. The reservations were only created in 1854, which is, 12 and 17 years after those original treaties. Mm. So the reservations are a kind of a retrocession of the cession. So it's an interesting idea that reservations were not that well the rights that the people retained were not given by the United States, but were effectively retained by the United States. The other thing I think we
and he used the word negotiated as well.
Yes, right. Of course, because the United States wanted the treaty in order to, in the first case, to cut the pine trees, and in the second case, to mine the copper on the northern part of the state along Lake Superior.
We're talking with Larry Nesper, who is director of American Indian Studies and a professor of anthropology at UW-Madison. He's giving us analysis on yesterday's 17th annual State of the Tribes address before the legislature. You can join in. Did you listen to yesterday's address by President Johnson? What were your takeaways from it? 800-642-1234. Larry, President Johnson also touched on the harassment and racism that some Native peoples face while spearfishing. You wrote a book about this conflict over spearfishing. What points did you hear in yesterday's speech?
Well, it's distressing to hear that this continues. That it seemed like this was all settled in the early 90s with some lawsuits against the leadership of the protest organizations, as well as against the sheriffs, who the tribes felt were not adequately enforcing the law. They did not win that in the case of the sheriffs, but they did in the case of the leadership of the protest, and that really quieted things down. But this emerges, it seems like, pretty regularly. There are still moments. I mean, Indian spear fishermen are out on the lakes. It's nighttime. It's dark. It's fairly isolated. It's, in a sense, easy for someone to abuse them and to harass them, which is really unfortunate that this still goes on.
He also mentioned how they use the fish and how they feed the elders, and how if you did the math, it might come out to maybe 4 fish per person. Do you think that was an important point to make?
I do think. I think that it's a very different conception of subsistence activity. I noticed this when I was doing my field work in at Lac du Flambeau in 1991. We would often clean lots of fish and then take them around to different people's homes, people who were older people, typically older people who could no longer fish for themselves or for a graduation or a baptism or a feast of some kind. There's a real high priority placed on being generous with the produce of the earth on all of the reservations, but I certainly witnessed it at Lac du Flambeau and at Bad River. That's something that people take a great deal of pride in. I was just talking to one of the chairs, and he was telling me about fishing over at Mille Lacs, where they went over to Minnesota.
Like Mille Lacs, yeah.
They got quite a bit of fish, and took them 14 hours to clean all the fish, and then they went around and distributed them to the elders and to other people on the reservation.
And it's notable, too, to do this in a pandemic when there is, you know, when people really need this help.
Exactly, exactly. And often, you know, confined to their homes. No, that's really true. Go ahead.
Well, how do attitudes on resource management, how do they differ in tribal communities versus the rest of Wisconsin, and also that relationship with the DNR?
Well, I would say that fish are not commodities on the reservation, that they are really for purposes of creating social relationships between people. Unlike, I think, a lot of natural resources, fish particularly, are consumed by individual persons in the dominant society for the most part. The restrictions on the amount of fish people can take don't encourage the kind of generosity that we see in the tribal context. I think that there are tribes don't describe themselves as stakeholders, I don't think, in this. That's a vocabulary that is kind of a strongly corporate and capitalist kind of view of what the natural world is supposed to be all about. People talk about the natural resources, what we call natural resources, as persons, right? Mm. This whole issue that we had over the wolves, the trees are persons. They're non-human persons. They have spirits. They have to be spoken to in a proper way. They have to be given offerings of tobacco when you take the bark from the trees, or you take the rice from the lake, or the fish, or the deer. All of that, that's a very personal relationship that people have with those really spiritual forces, which is quite unlike the way in which we think about, well, we call them natural resources. You do stuff with natural resources in that sense.
Yeah. Anthropologist Larry Nesper directs the American Indian Studies Program at UW-Madison, and he's giving us his takeaways from yesterday's State of the Tribes address delivered before a joint session of the legislature. What questions do you have about spearfishing and netting and other sustainable fishing practices? How do you hope the legislature will address the points that President Johnson made yesterday? Join in at 800-642-1234. Back in a moment with Larry Nesper here on the Ideas Network. We're discussing yesterday's State of the Tribes address, getting your insights on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The 17th address, representing Wisconsin's 11 federally recognized Native American tribes. Here's more from John Johnson Sr., president of the Lac des Flambeaux Band of Lake Superior Chippewa, on racially based mascots. He said they remain an unhealed wound.
When your children walk out the door, when they arrive at school, what do they see every day? Do they see something they can be proud of, or do they see something that makes them feel small and ashamed?
Has your community or school taken steps to retire discriminatory mascots? How do you feel about President Johnson's words? Join in, 800-642-1234. We have UW-Madison Anthropology and American Indian Studies Professor Larry Nesper, who stays with us. Larry, we heard there about mascots. What did you take away from President Johnson on discriminatory race-based mascots?
Well, that they're unacceptable, and that we all should be doing whatever we can in communities that retain these mascots to eliminate them. It's disturbing that the idea that this would continue, and I think he spoke quite eloquently about the effect, and very much from the heart, about the kind of effect that this has on children.
Yeah, and, you know, I feel, too, that while there have been some progress in some areas to address this issue, it's still a huge issue in many communities in Wisconsin that these mascots linger. You know, what more does he want the legislature to do, or how can this issue be addressed?
That's a good question. I think you probably have to ask him specifically about that, because he didn't go into specifics. But I believe we've had laws in place. The law was changed, a number of years ago, that made it harder to initiate contesting the use of mascots in schools. And that might be something to look at again. For a period of time, we had a law in place that made it relatively easy to contest this, but that was changed, and perhaps that should be revisited again.
At a number of points in the speech, he talked about how Native peoples walk into worlds, and his people looked for role models who walk successfully serving both worlds. Can you uncover the deeper meaning there of living in two worlds?
That's a long-standing trope of describing the difference between the norms of tribal society and the norms of American society, and I think that it's been useful in some ways, and in other ways it has been critiqued by scholars at different times. But essentially, it's the idea that the norms in a tribal society are different than the norms in our society. There's less individualism in tribal society. There's more of an orientation toward one's responsibilities than one's rights, for example. I think that's a sort of, you know, painting with broad strokes and saying something like that. But people are very much oriented toward sort of duty and obligation and responsibilities, and of course being recognized for their fulfillment of those kinds of responsibilities socially and by other people. Mm. There's honor is an aspect of all this.
What are the critiques or the criticisms of this, of living in two worlds? What do you see there?
I think the idea that that there's greater continuity and connection between these worlds than some people represent, or that maybe worlds isn't the best metaphor for the kinds of transitions that we make, that all of us move between different social enclaves in our lives, and that, you know, that's as true of, for Native people as it is for the dominant society.
We're talking with Larry Nesper, who is director of American Indian Studies and a professor of anthropology at UW-Madison. He's recapping for us yesterday's State of the Tribes address. It was delivered by John Johnson Sr., president of the Lac des Flambeaux Band of Lake Superior Chippewa, and getting your reaction to the speech at 800-642-1234. Steve in Sun Prairie is with us. Steve, what did you think of the speech?
My comment really is about the walleye fishing. You know, the science tells us that fish reproduce at a certain age, and the science tells us that they reproduce at a certain time. So the laws that were put in place were scientific-based in order to protect the entire ecosystem. This ecosystem doesn't care about a treaty. It doesn't care if the fish is being taken by the dominant society or minority society. The point of it is that the reason why these laws are in place is to protect the ecosystem. So I'd caution the guests about motives of people that are protesting. It sounds like there's some science denying going on.
Larry, go ahead.
Oh, I think that's absolutely right. I was impressed by how little science people understood, say, 30 years ago, when they were protesting against this. This is really about our people don't get to do what your people get to do. This is much more of a social and kind of racial conflict in that sense. But the caller is absolutely right about the science. The state had the obligation to protect the resource, and the federal government required that, and they fulfilled that obligation.
Let's look more closely at misconceptions about life on the reservation, and specifically the role that casinos have. What did President Johnson say there?
He talked about the benefits to the tribal communities of casinos in the forms of roads and bridges and public safety and sewer and water, housing, medical and dental, education, cultural initiatives, that this is a major form of income for a tribal society that does not tax its own people, and certainly it doesn't tax the industries, or if it could, it wouldn't have a strong enough tax base in order to do this. Casinos are a kind of redistributive mechanism that works to fund tribal government and tribal society.
Also mentioning, too, that noting that these jobs at the casinos are open to all people.
That's right. More than that is, the tribes are often the major employer in their region, and oftentimes, what he said, half of the tribal employees, this is not just for the casino, but for, he said, half his tribal employees are non-native people. So tribes really are economic engines in the areas where they operate.
Looking more closely at Act 31, which is the state law that was passed in 1989 mandating Wisconsin schools teach about Native American history and sovereignty and culture, what does he hope Act 31 could do in the future, how it could be strengthened?
Act 31 is a very good thing, and there's a scholar up at Green Bay, J.P. Leary, has done a book on this, and it's quite a good account of this. I think that the problem with Act 31 is that it is not strongly enforced, so that we don't get the accountability for this that we really need to have. And I think that's what President Johnson was calling for the legislator to do something about, putting some teeth into Act 31.
So making it more mandatory and perhaps the curriculum more unified among schools.
Yes, I think that would be appropriate.
What do you think the purpose of the State of the Tribes address is today versus when it was started in 2004? How do you see it resonate?
It's important to the tribes to have a venue to speak to the legislature, and I think it's important for the legislature to hear the tribal leaders speak. There's also typically a reception that takes place right after this. I don't know if they did this year because of the pandemic, but this is an opportunity for individual legislatures to talk to the tribal leaders about issues. I think people will talk about the importance of social relationships with each other that make the formal business of intergovernmental relations possible, and this is an effort to do that. So the tribes, I think, take this quite seriously. They appreciate the opportunity to address this joint session. And then it does things like this. We get a life of this thing coming over the radio and television covering this, too. And it brings the fact that we have 11 tribes in this state, actually 12, one unrecognized tribe, to the foreground and causes us to think about how our state is constituted in a slightly different way.
And there's also that ceremonial thank you to a number of people at the beginning of the address and perhaps saying, you know what, I see you, I recognize you.
There you go, exactly. I think that's right.
Larry, thank you for joining us.
It's been a pleasure, Kate.
Larry Nesper is Director of American Indian Studies and a professor of anthropology at UW-Madison. Ahead this hour, we hear about new research out of the University of Minnesota that explores fighting the invasive emerald ash borer with fungi. What questions do you have about this beetle and its damage? 800-642-1234. News update is next on the Ideas Network.